This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The House passed a budget. It's awful, but we're going to discuss what's in it and all that in just a moment. We'll talk about, well, everything going on in the world right now, Ukraine stuff. It's going to be a wild night on I'm Right. Okay, so let's talk about the budget bill. Last night, while you were sleeping, well, I don't know, depending on when you went to bed, but while you were sleeping, by the hair on their chinny chin chin, the House passed the budget. There are some things you need to know about it. We're just going to talk about it frankly. One, Trump supports it. This was Trump's budget bill. They loaded this thing up with everything he wants done. He called it, and I quote, a big, beautiful budget bill. So whether you love it or hate it, this has the backing of Donald Trump, so just know he's going to sign it. Doesn't really matter what you or I think about it. He's going to sign it. Once this thing finally gets through the Senate and everything else, it's going to be signed into law. Okay, that's one. Two, why is Donald Trump backing this bill? Well, presidents, this is universal, Republican and Democrat, presidents, when they get elected, understand that they really don't have that long, they don't have a big window in order to get things done that they want to get done. And in fact, most presidents get one bill, one big bill that does what they want. If you're Barack Obama, it was Obamacare. If you're Joe Biden, it was the Inflation Reduction Act. That's how it works. Republicans, it works the same way. Last time Trump got elected, what did he get? He got a big tax cut bill, and that was it. You generally get about one. And Trump knows this, he's no dummy. Trump has big plans. We've talked about this many times before. He has a big agenda, big plans. He wants to ensure it is going to get funded. And the things that are in this bill, things like border security, national security, things like that, they loaded the thing up to give, I don't want to say a blank check, but they even raised the debt limit. I mean, that they basically told Donald Trump, the things you want, here they are. This is yours. Enjoy it. Now, people are going to feel different ways about that. Thomas Massie, one of the great members of Congress, came out and said this.
We're going to add $328 billion to the deficit this year. We're going to add $295 billion to the deficit the year after that, and $242 billion to the deficit after that, under the rosiest assumptions. Why would I vote for that? The only way they get to this magic thing where it's not going to kill our country is 5 years from now, they imagine that 2.5% growth accumulates. And that even right here, they say they're going to cap discretionary spending. You think we're going to cap discretionary spending and then spend at the rate of inflation after that? That has never happened.
Thomas Massie knows what he's talking about. Now, keep in mind, there are plenty of good members of the House. I know we don't like to think of it like that, but there are good patriots there who want good things. Not a ton of them, but they are there. There are plenty of good patriots in the House who voted for it, Tim Burchett being one. Tim Burchett, why'd you vote for it?
I voted for it because there are tax cuts in this thing. We're shrinking. Actually, there really are real cuts. There is tax relief for the middle class, and there's border security in this bill. So, look, it's not everything you want, but I'm a believer if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And dadgummit, the American taxpayer's been on the menu a whole lot. So, hopefully we'll move ahead. The Senate version has actually spends more. Actually, they're not actual cuts in it. And worry about it. So we'll see what happens. And I had a great conversation with the president today. He was very friendly and answered all my questions and shares my concerns about the growth of government and how we need to make some cuts. I'm not real easy about all of it just because it's just so massive. And I would like to have, well, y'all know me, I'd like to cut this thing to the quick, but the reality is that's not gonna pass. We did get some legitimate cuts. So anyway, thank y'all for sending me here.
He just murders me. That was Tim Burchett with his trademark dry delivery, sounding as thrilled as he normally does with how things work in Washington, D.C., but that's the Tim Burchett version of it. Now, as far as the Senate bill, what are we going to get when this thing gets washed through the dirty jockstrap of the United States Senate? Well, Ron Johnson famously is on the spending problem in America. You remember he came on here and he told you what he thought about it.
He believes all of his tax cuts that he ran on as a candidate would be included in that. There's no guarantee of that. The bad thing about what the House is doing is whatever we do in terms of taxes would not be permanent. They would expire, just like the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. I mean, that was a real problem with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Their provisions have already expired. Everything other than the C-Corp rate and the, you know, tax provisions for only 5% of American businesses expire automatically 2026. Let's not make that same mistake. That was a massive mistake. Let's not do that twice. I mean, learn from what mistakes we made last time.
That's about as animated as I've ever heard Ron Johnson, who's famously pretty even-keeled guy. Okay, so let's just talk about this. I want you to picture a house. All right, stay with me here. I want you to picture a house, and this house has major, major problems. The foundation of the house, the foundation, it is cracking, it is faltering. The studs and the walls, they're rotted out. Termites are eating the house is about ready to fall down. And to make matters worse, the landscaping, it's all dying, it's bad. So let's talk about DOGE, shall we? Department of Government Efficiency, because that's all in the news every single day. Elon Musk, DOGE, they're finding waste here, waste there. We're stopping this, we're stopping that, we're stopping this, stopping that. What DOGE is doing is good, to be clear. It is good. Defunding the communist menace, which has been mostly funded with your money, is a good thing. It is a good thing. Good, good, good. DOGE is good. But saying DOGE can fix our debt and deficit problem is like looking at that house and thinking you can just replace the flowers out front and everything will be fine. Yes, the flowers need to be replaced. The landscaping needs improved, but none of that means anything at all if the foundation rots out from under you and the studs and the walls end up collapsing and the whole home falls on your family in the middle of the night. Who cares about the flowers? DOGE is important. They're doing outstanding work. We cannot save the United States of America without Congress making significant cuts. During COVID, you remember when the United States of America got a bad chest cold and collectively lost its mind, we decided we were going to spend our way through a virus. Still very curious how that is supposed to work. And during COVID, we upped our spending levels to get this. And just wrap your mind around this. We were already spending too much pre-COVID. During COVID, we started spending like we were spending in World War II. Let me say that one more time. During COVID, we got a little sick and we started spending like we were spending in World War II. And they won't cut anything now. So we are still, look, we don't even have COVID anymore. We are still spending as if we are fighting a global war against evil superpowers. And there are no significant cuts. Hey, listen. I'm thrilled as you are about 20 million from DOGE and a million from here, even a billion from there. I'm happy too. You're happy. I'm happy. We are all happy. That sounds really, really great. We are $36 trillion in debt. And by the time the 10-year run of this budget is over, that number will almost certainly be $50 trillion. We cannot doge our way to fiscal solvency. We simply cannot. What we must have is a Congress and a president willing to make unpopular cuts. That's what we need. And not little ones either. Big ones. Huge cuts. But how do we get that? How do we get that? Well, that's on us, you see. When's the last time the American people ran to the polls to vote out their local politician because he spent too much money? Just take a minute and think. You're a hyper-informed person. You're sitting here watching. I'm right. You could be watching anything. So you know this stuff. When's the last time Congress got swept out of office for spending too much money? It's never happened once in my lifetime. The American people not only don't care about the spending, the truth is they like it. The American people like it when Senator Idiot brings home $100 million for a brand new airport. They like spending taxpayer money. And until that changes, nothing changes. Oh, we can sit up here and cheer about border security and new naval ships, and we can sit up here and cheer about tax cuts. I don't like paying taxes either. And all this stuff is good. Doge is good. But the foundation's still crumbling, and the studs in the walls are looking a little bit shaky. And man alive, it doesn't look like things are going to change anytime soon. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. One of the great congresswomen, I love her so much, Harriet Hageman, joins us from the great state of Wyoming in just a moment. She voted for it. Now, this is not some idiot. She knows what she's doing. Very sharp woman. We'll talk to her about it. Before we talk to her about that, let's talk to you about sleeping. Sleep can be hard to come by. And when you take something to sleep, honestly, lots of times, at least for me, every time I've ever taken something to sleep in my life, I've regretted it. Because I wake up and I don't feel rested. Oh, sure, I slept. You give me something to sleep, I'll sleep for 14, 15 hours. I'll just die. But then I wake up and I don't feel rested. I feel tired. But then Dream Powder from Beam came along. One, I love hot chocolate anyway. Who doesn't? It's hot chocolate. It's a cup of hot chocolate. It's delicious. Only it has natural things in it, like melatonin. And you just sip on a cup of hot chocolate. And you'll slowly drift off to sleep. And you're not tossing and turning all night. But more importantly, when you wake up, you feel ready, rested, ready for the day. Up to 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
We got it done. We had the requisite number of votes to move this process along, and now passing the budget resolution in the House, it will go to the Senate. This is the first important step in opening up the reconciliation process. We have a lot of hard work ahead of us, but we are going to deliver the America First agenda. We're going to deliver all of it, not just parts of it.
Okay. That was Mike Johnson last night. Vote squeaked by. Now the reconciliation process begins, whatever that means. I bet you Harriet knows, but joining me now, the wonderful congresswoman from the state of Wyoming, Harriet Hageman. She is one of the good ones out there. Okay, Harriet, you voted for this. Guys like Thomas Massie, who I also love, voted against it. I understand both sides of it. I hear it all, but it's your vote. You're the one in power. I'm the idiot on TV. Tell me about it.
Well, we need to be moving forward with this part of the process so that we can get to reconciliation. And reconciliation is going to give us the opportunity to right a lot of the wrongs from the Biden administration and do it quite quickly. Under reconciliation, we only need 50 votes in the Senate rather than 60 that would be typical under these circumstances. And that's huge. What that means is that we don't have to be negotiating with the Democrats about funding the government and the cuts that we are looking at doing. I think it's very clear with the current administration and the support that he has that the president has from people around the country, that we need to right-size government. And we need to do that both through the legislative action as well as some of the work that the president is doing. So I have supported this particular step in this process because I think that we truly need to get to some of the fundamentals and reverse some of the things that Biden did, such as attempting to hardwire the endangerment finding into the so-called Inflation Reduction Act or IRA. So there are a lot of priorities that I have with reconciliation. This is one step so that we can get there so we can start carrying those out.
Does this eliminate the entire Inflation Reduction Act? Because we were told, at least the little birdies were chirping before this thing, that there were a lot of even GOP members of the House that didn't really want to get rid of that nice little congressional gravy train because of all the checks that came back to their districts. Does it dump the whole thing?
I don't believe that it does, no, but there are important things for my district that we are getting rid of. I would like to see the entire IRA repealed. One of the challenges that we have with reconciliation is there are very strict and complicated rules of what we can and cannot do. And what they refer to, the primary one, as being the Byrd rule. And the Byrd rule limits what you can do in a reconciliation package that you cannot be addressing policy. Everything has to be budget oriented. The other challenge that we have is that all of the work that we do has to be scored by CBO. Now, I've got some concerns about the way that CBO scores our bills as compared to how they score the Democrat bills. But what we do have to do is we have to make sure that we're staying on the budgeting side of the ledger, not the policy side. And that's why it becomes difficult in some ways to do all of the things that we would like to do. But what I'm focusing on, as I indicated with the endangerment finding, is I'm looking at those provisions of the IRA that funded the Green New Deal endangerment finding agenda and policies. And so we are taking portions of it out. The other thing that we're trying to do that I think is absolutely huge is include portions of the RAINS Act within reconciliation. Now, what RAINS Act would do is limit the power of administrative agencies. One example, one primary provision of that being an administrative agency could not adopt a regulation that has an economic impact of over $100 million unless it is approved by Congress. So again, trying to reclaim the Article I authority is what we're trying to do, and the RAINS Act would help us to do that. It would substantially undermine the authority of these administrative agencies and of the executive branch and their ability to legislate. I'd like to see the number be lower. I think $100 million is too high. But again, we have to work with other members of Congress, and even getting this through, I think, could have some challenges, but I think it's very important to the American people.
Do you get frustrated working with some of these dirt balls?
Well, Jesse, you know, you have been one who's been willing to talk about this for a long, long time. And you've talked about it in terms of your own state and the challenges that you have with people who run as conservatives. And then when they come here to govern, they do not govern as conservatives. And you said at the top of this interview that I was one of the good ones. But the only reason you think I'm one of the good ones is I'm doing exactly what I said I would do. When I ran for this office, I told you what I was going to do. And every single day that I get up, I try to do exactly what I told the people of Wyoming. And so it is important for me as a conservative to make sure that I'm taking conservative votes and trying to right this ship, trying to reorganize and trying to resize, downsize government. I think it's important to do that. There are some people that we work with that tend to be more liberal, even if they do run as conservatives. And that is a frustration.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You're also the chair of the Anti-Woke Caucus. Please tell me about this. How'd this come to be?
So it came to be because at the time, Representative Jim Banks started this, and the idea was to expose all of this woke ideology that has been embedded in our schools and our government and society as a whole. So it was started about 2 years ago, kind of at the peak wokeness, if you will, with all of the social justice nonsense and the intersectionality that we were hearing about and things. And so what Jim Banks did is he was bringing in speakers to talk about how this was affecting all of our various institutions. Again, our universities, even going down to grade school and junior high, middle school and high school, how it was affecting our federal agencies. And since he's gone to the Senate, I've taken on the mantle of the Anti-Woke Caucus. And what I'm, again, trying to do is expose what this woke ideology does, what this social justice ideology does, I don't know if you saw my CPAC speech on Saturday, but what I talked about is how this woke ideology is largely to blame for the disaster that we saw out in California. And what it has to do with is a misdirection of assets. So you have California that has focused on climate change and global warming and DEI and all of this nonsense for all of these years. And then what happened? When there's an emergency, they've got air, their fire hydrants are sucking air and they don't have water in the reservoirs. This is what happens when a government focuses on doing things that it shouldn't be doing. It becomes incapable of doing the things that it should. And I think that California is just an incredible example of that. We know because they did videos of it. They showed videos of these women talking about how, you know, having more women and more gay people in the fire department was so incredibly important, because when you arrive at an emergency, the people that you're trying to help, they want you to look like them. And I'm thinking, that's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life. Who would say such a thing? I don't care if you have 14 heads when you arrive at my house if I'm having a heart attack. Just save my life. You know, and so what they were doing is they've really misdirected assets, and it's happened at every single level of the government. But in California, it's caused hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in damages and absolutely destroyed lives. Again, focusing on global warming rather than hardening their infrastructure. Did you know that Gavin Newsom vetoed a bill that would have provided funding for hardening the infrastructure, providing for escape routes, would have done more in terms of vegetation management? That bill passed both houses of the Democrat-controlled legislature, and he vetoed it. You know why he vetoed it? Because he said, yes, we need to do more in terms of fire mitigation and protection, but we cannot do that in a way that will undermine my vision for housing. And his vision for housing is multifamily homes and shoving people into 15-minute cities. So he vetoed a bill that could have helped with that catastrophe from last fall, because he wants to shove people into multi-unit housing and get rid of single-family homes. Now, who would do anything that's that dumb?
Oh, communists. It's like the sunny version of North Korea. It's so sad what happened in California. Congresswoman, come back and join me anytime. Appreciate it. I feel so bad for all my friends in California. I have so many friends in California. Hard right. I'm total anti-communist. And the text they sent me, it's just, Jesse, we're in hell. It freaking sucks. You know what doesn't suck? Wasson watch. You like my watch? It's a Wasson watch, you see. And it's one of these motion watches. I don't need a battery or anything like that. It automatically, it just keeps going with motion. And yes, it's a very nice watch. I'm thrilled with it. I'm more thrilled that my business goes to a company that shares my values. Wasson Watch shares our values, and they don't do it quietly. You know, so many people in corporate America and sports and whatnot, we're always told, oh, there's a lot of people on our side. And don't you ever look around and say, well, where are they? Why don't they speak up? Wasson Watch speaks up on behalf of you, your country, the unborn. They don't just make these amazing high-end watches. You should see the little leather case they send with it. It's just awesome. Anyway, they don't just do that. They promote our values loudly and unapologetically. That's who gets my business. 10% off your watch at wassonwatch.com. We'll be back.
Most FBI people, current and former, are really shocked. I've heard from many of them in the last 24 hours. It takes people an entire career, 15, 16, 17, 18 years, before typically they're ready to fill this role. So to bring in someone who has no connection to that whatsoever is really stunning and dangerous, I would add.
Stunning and dangerous. We only have the most qualified people in leadership roles at the FBI, after all. That Dan Bongino, ooh, scary guy. Joining me now, Lee Smith, columnist at Tablet Magazine. Hey, Lee, why so nervous at the FBI? I don't understand it.
Well, Dan, Jesse, some people say stunning and dangerous. I say stunning and brave. I think it's a great move. I can't remember when I found out. Either it was Sunday night or when I woke up Monday morning and I said, wow, that's fantastic. So these, I mean, between Cash and Dan, you don't need much more to figure out what's gone on at the FBI, especially Russiagate. So, of course, that's why someone like Andrew McCabe, and remember how Andrew McCabe advanced through the ranks of the FBI. I mean, this guy was not necessarily a top rank a field agent, right? This is a guy who stayed close to leadership, and that was his thing. He was a fancy lawyer from Duke University, and he polished all the right doorknobs, and that's how he got to where he was. And then, of course, he started to undermine Comey. But that's another story. Me, I'm incredibly excited about the leadership team at the FBI, and I suspect that all of your great viewing audience is as well.
Yeah, speaking of other things that were going on at the FBI, Dan Bongino recently came out and talked about one Adam Schiff. Here he was.
Why is Adam Schiff so worried? Folks, I strongly encourage you to go back and take another look today at the Russia collusion hoax. I know it's a story that's old and a lot of people want to move on. I'm going to be straight with you. I don't want to move on. We had the FBI in conjunction with the Department of Justice, officials in Congress, foreign governments, and intel people fabricate a story, invent a story that could have caused and done serious long-term harm to international relations with a nuclear-powered foe. It's kind of a big freaking deal. I'm not letting it go. And you listen to me. This is going to be very important in the coming days. I'm not letting this go.
He's not letting it go. What happened there, Lee? And why is Adam Schiff probably staying up too late now at night?
Right. Well, Adam Schiff was the major operative in the House of Representatives who was pushing Russiagate. He was ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee while Devin Nunes was chairman, and Schiff played to block at every possible turn. And you'll remember all of Adam Schiff's TV appearances where he said, I mean, the people in the House Intelligence, they called him Pathfinder, right? Because he was always talking about, I've seen more than circumstantial evidence that points to collusion. So Schiff was a very bad actor, and we suspect he was coordinating with other players, because there's actually documentary evidence of him meeting with people like Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS. So I'm glad that Dan is not going to let it go. And I don't know how they're going to work out, who's doing what at the FBI. You know, deputy director is an enormous job, but I wouldn't be surprised. I certainly hope, I have no inside information, but I certainly hope that Dan takes that same sentiment into FBI headquarters in Washington, and that he's one of the people getting to the bottom of what happened with Russiagate. Because Dan is absolutely right, Jesse. I mean, this really became the template for operations targeting not only Donald Trump and his aides, but also the American public, Russiagate. So I think it's very important, and I'm 100% supportive of Dan's efforts to get to the bottom of it. Now that he has access to everything that he needs, God willing, we'll start getting more answers, and we'll get some accountability finally.
I'd like some accountability for one James Comey. People remember James Comey, right? Here he was.
When you think about a second Trump administration, what do you think the implications would be for the FBI?
Oh, serious, for the Justice Department and the FBI, because Trump is coming for those institutions. He knows their power, and I think he has regrets that he didn't work hard enough to corrupt them last time. So he's coming for them, and that's a danger for all Americans. He's going to put people in positions in those organizations. He didn't have all-stars the last time. He'll have the bottom of the barrel this time, but people who will want to do his will, and that should worry every American. This election matters. Because of a reason like that, people have to participate. You cannot sit on the sideline. I don't care how you feel about Joe Biden, you must vote for him because the consequences on the other side are too severe.
Sounds like a man who is pretty worried about the personal consequences. Sounds like a man, Lee, who ran an off-the-books honeypot investigation against the Republican nominee for president underneath Barack Obama.
Yeah, well, you know, that we're hearing reports that the FBI is looking at this. But here's the crucial thing about that alleged operation, that this is, remember, Crossfire Hurricane. This was the operation investigating the Trump team, alleging collusion. But this was tied to the Hillary Clinton campaign. The Hillary Clinton campaign came up with the Steele dossier, which the FBI used to get a warrant to spy on Trump and his aides. Right. There's no connection here, this honeypot operation, to the Clinton campaign. So that says that Comey was running this, had nothing to do with the Clinton campaign. He was running it on his own, but under whose instructions? Remember, I think this is so crucial to understand that Barack Obama was the boss. These were all his spy chiefs, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, John Brennan, James Clapper. So it'd be great to get to the bottom of this. Find out who was running that honeypot operation. Was this just Comey's inspiration, or was Barack Obama, who again had reason to go after Donald Trump, personal reason, vendetta, grudges to go after Trump? And the question is, did he use FBI resources to go after Donald Trump with this honeypot operation?
Yeah, that's a big question and a big no-no. Okay, Lee, let's shift gears here before I let you go. Iran. Word is out that Iran, they think we're coming for their nuclear sites, and or Israel's coming for their nuclear sites. What's happening right now foreign policy-wise?
Well, Donald Trump has made it pretty clear, right? I mean, first it was sometime before the election when Biden warned the Israelis against hitting Iranian nuclear facilities, and Trump said, well, that's nuts, because that's the first thing you'd want to hit, right? Nuclear bombs are very dangerous. And so in February, after the election, Donald Trump said, look, I want to settle this. I want to settle this with some sort of negotiation. But if we have to, they're not going to get it. We don't want to bomb them. We don't want to decimate or destroy Iran, but they're not going to get the bomb. That's the bottom line. So the Iranians are hearing this. This is the first president that the Iranians have ever heard this from, who they are compelled to take seriously. So I think Donald Trump is very serious about this, and it is very dangerous. The possibility that the Iranians would have a nuclear weapon. So I'm pretty confident that Donald Trump will stop it. He says it, and I take the man at his word. We have plenty of evidence to see now that Donald Trump is serious about such matters.
Lee, as always, thank you, bud. Come back. All right. Let's do a little Ukrainian talk. These minerals we're supposed to get. Apparently, Zelensky's coming to D.C. on Friday. We're going to get some minerals. Well, what does that mean? We'll talk about that with our panel next. Before we talk about that, let me talk to you about getting a new phone for yourself. What about a new phone, brand new phone, iPhone 14, Samsung Galaxy at no cost? I know your phone's cracked. I know you drop it. I know you've dropped it probably several times. It's probably slowed down at this point in time. Why don't you just switch to PureTalk? With a qualifying purchase, you get a free phone, and you'll pay way less. My bill got cut in half when I switched from T-Mobile. PureTalk not only shares and promotes our values, they charge you less for the exact same phone service. You realize that? It's not some fly-by-night phone company. They're on the same 5G network. You don't drop calls. I have better coverage now than I did with T-Mobile. Switch. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. They make it easy. We'll be back.
Is it true that President Zelensky is coming on Friday to meet with you? And is the mineral deal sorted out?
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that he's coming on Friday. Certainly it's okay with me if he'd like to. And he would like to sign it together with me. And I understand that's a big deal, very big deal.
The peace process appears to be underway, and that's a good thing. There's been all kinds of talks about minerals. We get some minerals. What kind of minerals are we getting? Are we getting some vitamins for $100 billion? Let's talk to a couple guys who know so we don't sound stupid when we talk to our friends. Joining me now, Thomas Corbett Dillon, former advisor to Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and my friend Wade Miller, executive director of the Center for Renewing America. Thomas, let's start with you. We keep reading articles about how we're going to get some minerals and minerals and minerals, but normal people don't know what any of that stuff means. What are we getting? What's happening?
Well, Ukraine has one of the richest lands in Europe, really. So the potential there is massive. They have obviously lots of raw earth minerals that are needed, you know, in everything that is built, especially now that we're trying to build everything in America. It's going to require a lot of importing. But I think this is important because people don't realize that America gave so much money to Ukraine without a guarantee. The Biden administration basically said, here's all the free money. Meanwhile, Europe was saying, here's money, but we want this, we want that. So it's actually good. Trump is going back into time and saying, well, actually, I think we deserve something in return for all the cash we gave you guys.
Wade, we were told, at least Zelensky was caught on camera, he was actually giving a speech saying, I'm not giving any of this stuff up. There'll be no mineral deal. And it seems like about 5 minutes later, he's flying to Washington, D.C. to sign his name on the dotted line. What happened?
Well, I think Trump happened. I mean, Trump is the master of this type of foreign diplomacy. He just needs to turn a few screws and make them aware of all the different levers we can pull. But I'll also point out that this isn't just about getting paid back, although that is a big component of it. One of the risks of making a peace deal here is later than being called, you know, Chamberlain if something sparks back up. We also don't want to add them to NATO. So what does this do? It gives us a significant financial interest that is a signal to Russia and Ukraine as well that if they try to spark up things, now they're messing with our financial interests and our investments. So it's kind of a soft power move to ensure that this deal is workable and that later on Trump isn't getting called names by the radical left and claiming that he's Chamberlain or some sort of an appeaser.
Wade, let me stay with you for a quick second. Who is they, meaning who gets this money? Who's operating these things? You know, we kind of forget that the devil is oftentimes in the details. Is the United States government going to start running mines over there in Ukraine? How does this benefit me, the American taxpayer?
Well, at the end of the day, after a deal is set, what will probably happen is some sort of bidding process that U.S. Firms will compete in. And I'm sure that it'll be some sort of political component to make sure that, you know, this process is moving along. But this will mostly be private sector investment, private U.S. firms that will create jobs and opportunity over there. And also, critically, create different supply lines. Right now, we're overly reliant on China for a lot of different minerals. That's one of the reasons, for instance, that Trump is so interested in Greenland, is because of all of the rare earth minerals to make us less reliant on China.
Thomas, everyone knows by now, well, I shouldn't say everyone, most people know by now that back in 2022, there was a peace deal on the table, a peace deal reportedly that Zelensky was going to sign, Russia was going to sign, and then, well, the thing your country and my country have in common is our leaders told him, no, keep fighting, everyone needs to die first. Do you have the same military-industrial complex running your foreign policy that we do here?
Yes, unfortunately. And, you know, this was pretty much the original military-industrial complex. You know, a lot of these corporations have been around for hundreds of years. So you're right, there was a deal on the table. It was a good deal. It was a fine deal. And the fact is that not much has changed since that deal. You know, as we saw Trump today say in the cabinet meeting, no land is going to be changing hands. They're not going to go and push Russia out of the land that it's taken over. That's Russian territory now. So the fact is that deal could have been done. It was sunk, unfortunately, by, we think, mostly Boris Johnson, which is a bit of a sad situation for him to be in. But it was this idea of him taking this Churchill style, you know, never surrender type thing. Well, that was great during the Churchill era, but this is a very different war. And all that has happened is thousands of men have lost their lives. And I think that's a sad thing. So it's good that Trump is realizing that this is over and it's time to end it.
Gosh, that is a sad thing. All right, one final word on the Ukraine-Russia stuff before we move on to anything else. Wade, so it sounds like, from all the information I can gather, Russia won. Am I reading that wrong? They came in, they wanted a portion of Ukraine, the Russian-speaking portion of Ukraine. They bid it, they held it. They're not going to be removed from it. They've tried for 3 years, and in the end, they get what they want.
I think that's fair. I think that they certainly have the winning position. It may have been the case that they wanted more of Ukraine and that they didn't get that. There's a lot of reasons behind that that are historical problems for logistic supply chains of the Russian military. They're more effective as a moving group or of in defensive positions. But certainly at this point, Ukraine does not have the ability to move them off those lines. So it's really just kind of asinine to not take a peace deal seriously to try to figure out a way to end this. The only other routes forward are just more endless suffering and death. And the end result to that could just be even worse, in which the Russia could eventually take more land if they really wanted to. They have the ability to attrit Ukrainian forces through manpower and resources way longer than Ukraine can withstand it.
Yeah. As Napoleon said, quantity has a quality all its own, and we're seeing that now. Okay, Thomas, let's talk about your PM, Starmer. He's in the United States of America today doing the whole glad hand thing. Trump, it's so nice to meet you. But the United States of America has been very vocal recently, especially J.D. Vance, about some of the oppression going on inside the U.K., which it's really bad. You see police officers arresting people for Facebook posts, and you say to yourself, man, is this the same U.K. we used to be friends with? How's this work?
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, I'm very grateful that I moved to the U.S. I'm nervous every time I land back in England. I think they're going to come and get me for hate speech. But, you know, it's a sad state, and it's interesting to see what happens in the meeting. I think what we saw with Macron was interesting. He was love bombing the president. You know, he was saying, oh, Donald, you're so great. We love you. Starmer can't do that. He's a socialist. He's been elected by socialists in our country. So if he came in and started doing that, he'd be a laughing stock back in England. So he's got a fine line to play. And I think the president is not going to be too happy with him, especially with some of the things he's said in the past. So yeah, you know, the special relationship is pretty much as dead as it's ever been, which is such a shame because we've never had a more pro-British president. You know, the president's mother is Scottish. He loves the UK. He loved the Queen. And the fact is, it was our deep state that refused to engage with him in the first term and now is realizing, actually, we need to take this guy seriously, but it's a bit too late.
Yeah, that is a crying shame. Okay, Wade, wrapping this thing up here. Looks like the clean out has at least begun in our military. They have a long way to go. We got a new chairman of the Joint Chiefs. They're slowly but surely working their way through this pool of loser generals we have. What say you so far?
I think the DOD is moving in the right direction. We worked for the last 2 years, and by we, I don't mean DOD, I'm not at DOD, but a group of conservatives here in DC when Senator Tuberville put the holds on those military nominations over their abortion policy, a group of us started working to create dossiers on woke radical generals. And we handed over all of those materials. We urged caution to double check our work. We don't want to make sure that a good general isn't being thrown under the bus, that the allegations are fair, that there isn't some mitigating circumstance or explanation. And everything that I can tell is that they took that in good stride and have been serious about it. They did their vetting, and they're now making corrections to improve the DOD leadership. And I'm very excited about it. I expect that there will be further removals. We just saw today in the cabinet meeting, President Trump indicated that there's going to be more generals that are going to be replaced. And I think that's been sorely needed. And as you know, anyone below the rank of E6 and below the rank of O4 has been really complaining about the lack of seriousness in leadership in the military for years. And so we're taking the first stab at correcting that problem. And of course, it's going to come with a lot of pushback. But this reminder, this is very important, very needed to get our military back on the right footing.
Thomas, you got the same problem in your military over there? Because British military history is pretty freaking cool.
It used to be. I don't think we really have much of a military anymore. And what military we do have, the Royal Navy is currently waving the migrant boats in. You know, come on in, well, they're helping them. So I don't know if you can even call it a Navy anymore.
Oh, God have mercy. Both of you, appreciate you guys. Come back soon. Lighten the mood. Next. Eric Swalwell, by the way, it's time to lighten the mood. Eric Swalwell is one of those people that I've always found to be hilarious, absolutely hilarious. He's done so many things that reveal him to be just a gigantic boob, just kind of a goober. A goober who found himself with some power, and so no idea what to do with it, so he's just screwing it all up. He's running around with Chinese spies, making an idiot of himself everywhere he goes, and it's always a good time to walk down memory lane and remember when Eric Swalwell farted on your television set.
the evidence is uncontradicted that the president used taxpayer dollars to ask the Ukrainians to help him cheat an election. And the complaint that I've heard from... The evidence is uncontradicted that the president used taxpayer dollars to ask the Ukrainians to help him cheat an election.
Ask the Ukrainians to help him cheat an election.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.